Alarmy, check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our Guest Alarmist series, only on Patreon.
Do you remember too, Rebecca, like I made a comment to you like after we saw the bug, where like our energy just collectively like dipped.
100%. I can feel it now. I know that devastation.
And
it was what I felt.
Like the visual experience of the food that was still on the table, because yes. You had said in your story that it was after
we had just
dinner.
Finished eating our meal.
Yeah, but yeah. It was actually during the meal.
Oh.
And the physical like look of the food changed. Like it changed.
Yeah.
Yes.
You see it and then you see your food.
Because you assume it's been in your food.
Yeah. Yes. That's all you can think about.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Guyana accident. Here's what you need to know. On September 13, 1987, two local men in the city of Guyana in central Brazil wandered into an abandoned hospital. They were looking for valuable junk or scrap metal to sell, but what they discovered was far more dangerous. The once thriving private hospital was called El Instituto Guyana de Radioterapia, and it contained a radiotherapy center for cancer patients. In 1985, the hospital moved locations and left behind a teletherapy unit. Within the unit, encased in a steel canister, remained a small capsule containing about 93 grams of a highly radioactive salt-like substance called cesium-137. Ignorant of the danger, Roberto dos Santos Alves and Wagner Mota Pereira found the unit and brought it home with them. That night, they began experiencing dizziness and diarrhea. The next day, Wagner's hand had become swollen and irritated. They sought medical help, but were told it was probably a reaction to something they had eaten. Roberto was driven by curiosity and continued to dismantle the teletherapy unit. He eventually pried open the steel, wheel-shaped canister and out poured a powdery substance. Roberto thought it might be gunpowder and tried burning it, but luckily for him, nothing happened. It's clear that the men did not know they were dealing with radioactive material. A few days later, the men sold the teletherapy unit to a scrapyard where the owner, Dever Alves Ferreira, noticed a glowing blue light that was emitting from the canister. He further dismantled it and showed it to family and friends. He even gave some of the powder to his 6-year-old niece, who used it to play dress-up and reportedly ate some of it. Eventually, Ferreira's wife, Maria, noticed that she herself and other people around her were getting sick and grew suspicious of the blue substance. On September 28th, 15 days after its first discovery, Maria transported some of the material to the hospital where it was confirmed to be radioactive. Local, national, and international media outlets picked up the story and a countrywide panic broke out. Over 100,000 people flooded into hospitals believing they may have been infected. Time magazine would later call the incident one of the world's worst nuclear disasters. Fun facts, aka death stats. The cesium-137 was spread around so much that contamination was later found to reach 100 miles away. Of the 85 homes found to be significantly contaminated, 41 were evacuated and 7 were demolished. Cleanup generated 3,500 cubic meters of radioactive waste, equal to more than 275 truckloads, at a cost of $20 million. Heavy rain that fell days after the incident complicated the response by dispersing cesium-137 further into the environment. Following the incident, a triage was performed in a soccer stadium where over 112,000 individuals, 10% of the population, were screened for radioactive contamination, skin and or clothing, from September 30th through December 21st, 1987. 249 people were exposed to radioactive materials. 46 people received medical treatment for radioactive contamination, and 4 died from radiation sickness.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guests today are Katie Hearn Church and Nathan Foster. Hi, Katie and Nathan.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us. We are so excited.
Thank you so much for being here. We are, Katie and Nathan are the hosts of Queen's Podcast. I love this podcast. I sure hope our listeners listen. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your show?
I would love to. Nathan, would you like to take it away?
Sure. Well, we like to pair famous women from history who happen to be either royalty or maybe not royalty, but we like to pair them with a cocktail and, you know, spill some tea, maybe some bourbon.
It is a little bit drunk history meets a little bit gossipy meets actual real, like real history research. And we have a lot of fun. We make a lot of dick jokes. It's if you like history and booze, and you might like our show.
I really think they will.
We've studied a few queens in our history.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've
come across a few. We've done the Anne Boleyns. Yeah, we've done Jane Seymour.
Rebecca doesn't
know. Anne Boleyn is Katie's writer. I mean.
But Rebecca
don't
doesn't
get her started. She'll go all week.
But Rebecca doesn't let us get drunk during the podcast.
No, she's very straight edge that way. So.
Yeah. So we do sober, the sober version. Yeah.
You know
don't
what?
Don't mind me and my michelada.
Do you guys get into like fictional queens, like the Queen of Hearts or anything along those lines? Or are we doing real like history queens?
On Patreons, from time to time, we'll do like mythical queens. Like I've covered Lilith, or we've done, you know, stuff like that. But on the main, it's usually actual people that existed.
Capital Q queens. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Cool.
So we'd like to start off the show by asking our guests, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
Oh, God.
Gestures vaguely at everything.
So accurate.
Yeah. Just, you know. I don't know. What is there anything been in the news lately?
God,
I don't know. I haven't really checked.
Yeah. We stopped looking.
Yeah, we did too. Like, that's one of the things with history, though, is like you start, like you can go back and you start seeing all these red flags. Mm. And then whenever you start seeing them nowadays, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Remove myself from this situation or else I'm going to have a straight up panic attack for no reason in front of everybody in the grocery store.
Oh my God. That, you know, honestly, that's such a great response that I can really relate to. It's like future red flags that you're seeing. I can understand why, as two people who and a group of us here who enjoy history and learn about history all the time, it's like that is somewhat comforting and somewhat alarming as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it is hard to be someone that studies history and then watching history repeat itself. Mm-hmm. And like we covered Eva Perón last year. And I don't want to get into modern day politics, but there were things that I was like, oh no, that seems a little too familiar. Right, oh no. Right. Like it can be very alarming.
Yeah.
I will have to put Evita on our list.
Y'all should definitely cover like what happened to her body after she died. I think that might be an interesting.
Ooh, wow. Yay.
She was a jet setter.
After death.
Damn. Wow. Okay. We're absolutely putting her on. Yeah. Yeah. Clayton's on it. So there's no easy transition. Alarms. I mean, talk about a lack of alarms that happened in the Guyana accident. This is, you know, considered to be one of the worst nuclear disasters in history. It is fascinating how just like a few errors just led to the contamination of an entire city.
Just like
just a couple errors, like breaking into a hospital and, you know, accidentally stealing something that looks steel.
Yes. Right. it feels like when you think about nuclear, the potential for sort of a nuclear disaster, your mind goes to these like Independence Day war kind of stuff,
or like huge factories that are overheating.
Yes. Right. And, you know, but this feels like a B story in that movie's A story. You know what I mean? This feels like two bumbling fools, like on their own little journey, who, you know, had
a
this
comedy
incredible
of errors.
Yeah,
it really is the comedy version that, like, if you're in the play, you don't treat it as a comedy, of course.
It's more like a tragedy of errors.
A tragedy of errors. Yes, yes, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess the sort of like, what would you say the ignorant, I mean, do you want to just throw up the ignorance of
we could, like, throw something on the board,
radio, like just like radiotherapy in general, like as to just to get started, what do you think?
I think we can absolutely call it that. I was thinking we could call it like the like poor labeling.
Oh, bad labeling.
Okay. I know what you mean, though. It's like the lack of understanding of what a radioactive substance might be, or you know.
And in fairness, I learned about how radiotherapy treatment works by researching this accident.
Right. So if you hadn't learned about it, or if, like, let's say you hadn't been in a facility for the treatment of cancer or that kind of thing, you might not know the dangers surrounding it. So it really makes sense that these two men who stumbled upon what I think they thought was an opportunity, would not realizing that they have committed, you know, it went from like a very simple crime, you know, to an absolute disaster.
Right.
Is a direct statement from people in Brazil.
And just two people being like, oh cool, we can steal this shit, no one's gonna miss it, this place seems to be a little bit abandoned anyway, to radiation poisoning.
National
we have
problem.
Some sparkly dust.
Like, we call this on our show like a major oopsie daisy.
Yes,
oopsie daisy.
Big old oopsie.
It's like one of the biggest we've come across, honestly.
Yeah. My and bad.
I do want to give a shout out to our listeners in Brazil, because this has been a subject that they have, like, multiple listeners have
recommended
been recommending and sending us, you know, and I would have never heard about it. Otherwise, I just hadn't come across it. Let's put cesium-137 up on the board.
Sure.
A little backstory here on what that is. This is from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency website. Cesium, chemical symbol CS, is a soft, flexible, silvery white metal that becomes liquid near room temperature, but easily bonds with chlorides to create a crystalline powder. The most common radioactive form of cesium is CS-137. CS-137 is produced by nuclear fission for use in medical devices and gauges. It is also one of the byproducts of nuclear fission processes in nuclear reactors and nuclear weapons testing. And it goes on to explain that external exposure to large amounts of CS-137 can cause burns, acute radiation, sickness, and even death. Exposure to cesium-137 can increase the risk for cancer because of the presence of high-energy gamma radiation. Internal exposure to cesium-137 through ingestion or inhalation allows the radioactive material to be distributed in the soft tissue, especially muscle tissue, which increases cancer risk.
That's just a general explanation, but Katie, Nathan, you guys, can you explain us in more detail what that actually means?
Yeah, Katie.
Yeah, it's a radioactive, it's radioactive glitter.
Yeah.
They have radioactive glitter and they're like, yay. So moral of the story, and everybody loves radioactive glitter.
I think this is what serious historians and medical professionals call a bad time. Like, this is about to be a textbook bad time for everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, sadly, it is how that is exactly, Nathan, how it was explained at the time. So one of the victims of this terrible disaster was a four-year-old girl who was given the substance essentially to play with. Right. And they thought it was like beautiful and it looked like glitter. Mm. And it was, you know, they put it all over their body. And and I think at some point it must have transferred onto some food that she was eating. And that was how she eventually was, you know, poisoned and later died from the exposure. But it was just the fact that, like, there was a glowing substance.
So we have this on our planet. It's like, how do we have
but
this?
It's such a double-edged sword, right? Because it's what's used to
treat. It's useful,
treat.
Right.
Right. Well, it calls on the owners and the creators of this material to take special care not to let it get into other people's hands, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. only percentage of the world knows how this stuff is made and how it works, right?
So how do we capture that, like, on the board? Like, poor, is that like lack of or poor like management or
we can put the IGR, which was the
the hospital itself
that was abandoned. Okay. We can put that up on the board. This is from Argon Electronics website. The IGR, Instituto Goiana de Radioterapia.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
It had moved 2 years earlier, leaving behind an obsolete teletherapy unit in the abandoned clinic. The institute failed to inform the authorities of the existence of the outdated device, and the machine had sat unattended in the building in downtown Goiana, 600 miles from Sao Paulo, until the two criminally enterprising men removed the unit in a wheelbarrow while evading a security guard in the process. So
definitely the people who abandoned the facility didn't let, I know it was the 80s, and so we probably didn't, you know, I don't know enough about radiation, the history of radiation in the medical field to speak to, like, when we started realizing that, hey, this could potentially be a super bad thing if somebody comes and takes it. But yeah, to leave that abandoned and not alert the authorities.
That's just negligence for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Put those sons of bitches on that board for sure. Absolutely.
I think you're right. Clayton, negligence on their part was huge. This was an abandoned building. So, and it wasn't the first time that people had broken into this building. So the fact that it was just that these two men have stumbled upon the device and maybe brought some tool. I, from what my understanding is, that they had some tools with them, tried to tinker with it, you know, to get the canister out, weren't able to. So they, like, put it in a wheelbarrow and brought it to their home to, you know, to use some stronger, to get some better tools. And
we got to put them on the board too, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There's like a lack of I don't know, like from what I was reading, this happened after Chernobyl happened. Chernobyl happened in 86. This happened in 87.
So the world should have been a little bit more cognizant of.
Yeah, like if you see a glowing substance,
right?
Probably not a good thing.
Don't touch. Like, yeah.
Glowing blue substances are usually bad.
Right. It, you know, it kind of reminds me of the Outbreak, the movie Outbreak, where the people who are sort of shedding and sharing this like very dangerous like disease in the case of Outbreak are totally unaware, right? And these guys were just so unaware, which makes it sort of, you know, we kind of put on this comedic, like it seems funny to us, but it's obviously like extremely like tragic and scary at the same time. Yeah. Like the potential for what these, like one of the guys, Roberto, like dug into the crystal, right?
Yes.
Like he like broke it up and
so he puts it
more of it. And
yeah, he's having a hard time opening it up. And so from what I've heard is he puts it under this mango tree in his backyard and he's like trying to pry it open. The other scrap metal hunter, who's Wagner Mota Pereira, and then the other Roberto Dos Santos Alves are the two guys who steal this. So Roberto has it in his backyard. He gets like a screwdriver and he sees like a little circle that has a glass on it, and he just starts to like try and pry it open and hit it, and eventually the powder comes out, and he's like, oh, maybe it's gunpowder, and he tries to heat it. He lights a fire under it. Like it's
that's not a good idea, yeah. Even if it's gunpowder.
I know. Like,
I think what's interesting about it too, I mean, yes, why were these guys stealing this stuff? But why were these guys stealing this stuff? Like, what's the historical context? What's the like economic context in which they're trying to make, you know, like it's always seem there's always a little bit more to it where it's
yes.
Like, yeah. Were they just like evil guys trying to steal stuff?
Or I don't
like,
think so.
You know what I mean?
No, from what I read, they were, it was a cultural thing at the time was to break into places and steal scrap metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that you could go and sell the scrap metal to make
especially
money.
Especially if it's
and
an abandoned building. And it's not mm-hmm. evil, like mugging somebody, you know, you're not, it seems like a victimless crime. If you're just going into, oh, this place has been abandoned for years. They obviously right. don't care about the stuff in there. Let's go steal their metal and sell it yeah. because they don't know that, oh, what we're going to steal is going to spread radioactive poisoning to everybody.
I know it feels
them
like
and times
step...
are tough. You,
they
you
are.
Get, you get.
I mean,
know.
There was a recession.
You get creative.
In 87-ish, exactly. Right?
I do like... think we need to put the 1980s economy in Brazil.
Okay.
At the time, so the 80s, the economy in Brazil was experiencing a significant downturn. It was marked by high inflation, a growing external debt, and the beginning of what would be known as the, quote, lost decade, a period of economic stagnation and crisis that plagued the country throughout the 1980s. This was largely due to a combination of factors, including rising oil prices, high interest rates, and unsustainable government spending, leading to a balance of payments crisis and currency devaluation. So 80s are tough. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about those guys who go around on trash day and
yeah, go through your recycling bins,
just
and
kind
stuff.
Of go through mm-hmm. your stuff. But it's like a scavenger. It's of course they took it one step. They broke into an abandoned building.
Right,
they
right.
took advantage of the fact that this it might not have. I've read a few. There some say that there was a security guard. Some others say that there wasn't a security guard.
Right, mm-hmm.
So who knows? They took advantage of a situation and were just trying to make a quick buck. After they have this canister in their backyard, they're trying to pry it open. They're starting to feel sick.
Mm-hmm.
They go to the doctor. The doctors all say that they think that they have food poisoning
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or some kind of allergic reaction. Roberto decides that he's just going to sell this. He's going to try and get whatever he can. He gets from... one account I heard was $25 for this canister.
Wow.
He sells it to a guy who has a scrapyard, and that then gets taken from one place to another place in the city. So that's already exposing more people in the transport of that. It goes to this scrapyard where the guy, forgetting his name, let's see.
The owner of the scrapyard?
The owner of the scrapyard, Fedeira is his last name.
Okay.
And this is like the capital city of Brazil, right? So it's not like this is a small city. It's very populated, right?
This is the capital of that state.
Okay.
It's the largest city in that area in central Brazil.
Right. There's about a million
people.
Yeah.
There's a million people in the city. And it's a pretty dense city.
Right.
So the canister goes to the scrapyard. That's where the guy starts noticing the blue glow. And that's when he starts saying, "Wait a minute. This thing I bought for $25, this might be worth a lot of money." And he starts showing it to people, and people are interested. Of course, unknowingly, he gives some of the substance to his niece, who is the 4-year-old who later dies. His wife starts getting very sick. She goes to the hospital. They tell her again that she has food poisoning, but she's the one actually who comes back and says, "This is odd. This might be from connected. And she puts the material in a bag, a plastic bag, takes it back to the hospital on a bus. Wow. So it's like good, but it's also exposing also. Right. It's more exposure, more people, right, you know? Right.
Public transportation, we're already sometimes like ass to elbow with everybody on it anyway. Just your bag of radiation.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this explains the public panic, I guess, after the fact, because everyone was so worried about exposure, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So she actually is the one who puts an end to this accident. Luckily, it doesn't just continue to sit somewhere and continue to expose people. But just for that period of time, she also ends up dying. So she is one of the four people who die. And
the woman who brought it to the hospital.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was she was the one who pieced it together and prevented even more of an outbreak. So she kind of is, credit to her for taking that action.
And the doctors at the hospital who were like, "Wait a minute, maybe this isn't poisoning. Maybe this could be some kind of radioactive exposure."
Yeah.
It's also hard to think about, like, on one hand, you almost want to be like, put the doctors on the board for telling them that they had food poisoning when it was something so much more serious. But we also have to remember what pre-internet life was like.
Right.
Like, these doctors haven't, you're just going to like your family physician. They don't know what, like, this kind of poison, like, they're just like, "Oh, that sounds like food poisoning to me."
Right.
You know? And I'm sure the guys didn't tell them, "Hey, we found this canister glowing blue glitter in it." Like,
from the stolen scrap metal.
So the patient might not have been forthright with everything that they had done.
Yeah.
Like, and I think if they had told them everything that had happened, they would have been like, "Wait a second. Glowing blue glitter."
But the woman, what was her name again?
Maria.
Maria probably told her doctor, or maybe didn't even think to mention it. But still, just think how lucky we are to live in the time of the internet, where you could like maybe put a video up on Reddit and be like, "Any ideas, y'all?"
Yeah, what is
and,
this? You know? It's figured out pretty quickly. I mean, we should just put the doctors up on the board just for the sake of being holistic about this, even though they might come down.
Oh, they'll come down real quick, because I just don't think the first thing you're going to think of.
Why would you? Yeah.
And exactly, Katie, unless you know the details about what has happened like in the past few days, I do think it is really important that when we go to doctors, we think about any changes that have happened in because so many times it is time and time again, it just happens to be like one little change that happened that you might not think is that important? Yeah. You know, like, oh, you started taking a vitamin or, right, you know, something that you don't realize, you don't put a lot of thought behind, mm-hmm, but it ends up, you know, you could be allergic to it, right, or who the hell knows, mm-hmm, you know?
But also when it comes to radiation and stuff like that back then, and probably still now, I don't know that my family doctor that I go see when I just have aches and pains and colds
would guess radiation.
Yeah.
Even now. Right. Yes. So back in the 80s, when your only specialists were probably seeing shit like that, mm-hmm, at, yeah, all. So, you know, yeah, this doctor may have went to 8 years of medical school, but probably not for cancer specialists, right, you know, right, like, or whatever, yeah, else radiation is. What is it? Is it used for anything besides cancer? I don't really. Anyway,
it's a good question.
I'm radiation not sure. Therapy.
I think there's some immunotherapies maybe, okay, that they, but in the 80s, but primarily cancer, yeah, I think is the.
So unless you're like a specialist for
dealing, you know, with this, yeah, regularly.
Yeah, why would you just be like, oh, you got all that gross stuff that comes with food poisoning. You might live in a low income place where you might have been, it's exposed, way more likely, yeah, in a low income place that you had bad fish than you had, yeah, radiation poisoning.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a reminder that it's really just a process of elimination when it comes to, mm-hmm, you and your doctor. And that's why there's a lot of questions and you have to be so thorough, to Rebecca's, right, point. Because it's like, otherwise they're just like, I don't know, like a ton of things cause aches and pains.
Yeah.
What kind of, you know, like,
did you work, right, out?
Let's get specific.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is, if you steal some scrap metal and it's glowing and there's some doctor really fancy dust coming out of it, it might be related to your health issues. Mm. Yeah.
The fact that this radioactive material is so accessible, I think we need to put that up on the board.
Okay.
The accessibility of radioactive material. This is from the National Library of Medicine. As little as 100 grams of highly radioactive material, such as cesium-137, may lead to a massive environmental contamination, fatalities, and permanent disability due to acute radiation sickness, wreak havoc, and disrupt society on a scale that is challenging for public health officials to manage. Thousands of tons of radioactive materials from the waste products of nuclear weapons and power plant manufacturers will have to be stored for at least 100,000 years to prevent danger to human life and society. Public health officials and governments must build systems to keep humans safe and physically isolated from these radioactive materials for as long as possible. So,
just, right, the idea of radioactive material, I mean, it must be so valuable. Like, you know, they create energy. I mean, obviously, they, you know, you use them for power plants.
Right.
But and then they also have this radiotherapy for cancer treatment. So they must have a lot of value, of these like powerful, right, chemicals.
It's just so volatile. Material. That's the unfortunate side.
Yeah,
it's isn't
so
it?
Dangerous. Right.
Yeah. It's.
I mean, what is radioactive? Jeez, this is a, you know, like, what would you say its primary uses? It's probably energy from power plants, right? Mm-hmm. That's mainly.
That's what I would think, is energy for power plants, and then weapons would probably, right, be right behind,
right,
it.
Yeah.
Those two things are probably the leaders of it. But I mean, Chernobyl was the same way, yeah, where once that happened, you have to like block it off for 200,000 years. Mm-hmm. Like, it's crazy to think about that. Like, long after we're gone, no animals could touch that ground because,
right, yeah, right, all get sick,
blow up. I don't know how science works, but maybe they blow up.
well, and that's, no, like the maintenance of go. That. Like, how are they? You know, we as humans have a really poor track record on our maintenance, right?
Oh yeah,
a lot of things fall apart. So, are we telling the people as we die off to the next generation, hey, by the way, make sure you take care of that chamber over there, has a ton of like killer stuff in it that you don't want to mess with.
Yeah. I mean, we're still trying to figure out things that happened 2000 years ago.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that we have better ways of, I guess, do we have better ways of preserving things? I don't know. I was going to say, like, back then they had, people could write on tablets, right? But nowadays we have what, paper and the cloud that we send information to. How are people in the future going to be able to access this? Because it's getting more and more
AI is going to take over, and they're immune to the radio. You know, doesn't matter. Well,
you know, my point is, like, God forbid there's like a huge fire and we lose all of our libraries. How are we going to communicate?
We're going to have to build a radioactive reactor to create power so that we can build our phones and clouds again. But then we'll have to store the waste.
But like to even leave the instructions of the radioactive material is here.
It's a good question. You know where we put it? Do you know where we put, you know what we do to get rid of it? I'm sort of like looking up now, like radioactive waste.
We bury it like underground, right? Like in.
Yeah. So first they store it for years in like cooling ponds. Mm-hmm. So like to try and like reduce, I guess, the radioactivity or whatever. And then they like encase it and put it in these like deep, like geological repositories. Like deep within the Earth's core.
That makes sense. So apparently there were a few houses that were so contaminated by this radioactive material that they just had to demolish and then take all of the debris.
The building material,
The building material to like miles and miles away to an isolated area and bury it.
Yeah. Huh. You just don't mess with this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the accessibility to me is like is like kind of a universal major problem outside of this incident. Just feels like we should all be really alarmed how easy it is to take a small amount of something so volatile and create like a huge public health issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the accessibility plus the lack of management of what happened kind of, it's like a simultaneous thing there.
Right.
It's like you guys didn't realize that there was radioactive material in this abandoned building and you didn't do anything about it. Like you just left it there.
You should have a list of all your material that you're, when you're moving hospitals, don't you have like a really intense list of all the really
biohazards.
Bad stuff?
Yeah. Like all your biohazard material. And well, that's like a lack of management, a lack of labeling, a lack of like you need to remove these things because they are a danger to people's health.
Yeah. Yes. And this is saying that they moved the hospital from one place to another in 1985. So it sat there for two years.
Yeah.
Years. Like, I guess you can give them a little bit of grace if maybe like it was like 3 months and there was some red tape or something.
Right.
Right. But whoever held up leaving dangerous materials there for 2 years.
Well, that's a very interesting point, actually. And in my little bit of research, there was a bit of a dispute between the Radiotherapy Institute and the local courts. Like, I think they wanted, Rebecca, correct
me if I'm wrong. It was like a landlord issue, right?
Yeah, they wanted to remove the hospital wanted to remove the teletherapy unit, this unit. They wanted to get it out.
But they had been evicted or something and they weren't allowed back in the premises or something like that.
Right. And so, and just 4 months before, I guess they tried to get it out, but the civil, like they used a police force to stop them.
It was like the courts were involved.
Wait.
Yeah, that sounds like a bureaucracy.
Landlords are bad guys?
Shocker, right?
Can you believe it? This is so new to history.
It's the first one ever, actually.
This is where it started.
First time it's ever happened.
This is where they got a bad reputation.
Should we just put landlords on the board?
Yes.
They deserve a spot. Also, like, it sounds
it's
like
bureaucracy.
Yeah, because it's like I understand that there's like dispute over like some kind of whatever, but if you're like, we are medical professionals, I understand there's a like issue here, but there's a bigger public health matter that needs to be addressed, that like you don't let us back in, but you got to let someone back in to deal with this highly toxic material. So why wasn't that happening? Like, why wasn't a judge like, okay, we'll get to this other matter, like deal with these toxic materials.
Right. And we could put that up on the board. We can put the court of Goyas, the state.
Okay.
So the state courts, which kind of prevented the sort of, like you're saying,
the
Clayton,
removal
like,
of the...
Yeah, the removal of this major issue.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that it's a highly dangerous substance. Do you trust humans Do we have we earned this trust?
Yeah, I mean,
no, I don't trust humans to this day. Right? Like, no, I go to the grocery store and I use the robotic checkout because I still don't.
No, but I mean, gosh, nah, because that, like, that takes you to like why that widens out the scope of the conversation, right? It's like, well, who's in charge of the massive amount of nuclear weapons that are existing right. in the world? Like the 10 countries who have access to like basically weapons that could destroy right. the world.
And that's a panic sort of attack like, waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Yay. Another thing to think about in the grocery store.
but do we want to, so we put the state up on the board, but then I also
humanity?
Think this idea.
Question. Yeah, there's room.
Definitely.
Humans getting handsy, that's something that we've used in past episodes.
It is true, yeah. And that does go back to the wanting to, the affinity to the glow, kind of. I can see us folding that into that.
I also feel like there was this security guard element of the story, right? Where some research suggests there was one there and they
yeah, and
snuck around him
wasn't.
And so they say there wasn't. But I also think beyond the security guard, you know those signs you see in the movies where then there's radioactive material, like those that the yellow and black like
yeah.
circle thing.
Yeah, with a triangle or something.
Is that does that need can't. A refresh? Like do we need to come up with a better sign? Mm. I mean, is that really selling what we're trying to tell here? I mean,
it should be, yeah, it should be that, like the skull and bones,
should
right?
We get the shouldn't world's designers to kind of like create a new type of
or this is a marketing and right yeah. on the door, don't steal this shit. Yeah, it's like, gonna kill
really
you.
Bad.
People don't, well, the thing is then this is why people don't trust humans because then someone will put that stuff over treasure. actual treasure to steer you away and people never
right.
know.
Touché, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. Now that's a great idea. Now I know where to hide my treasure. All of the treasure that I have.
Yeah.
Good idea, Clayton. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But I think you're right in that it's like a PR problem or like a danger
marketing
PR problem.
Some kind of like sign design.
Uh-huh.
Issue.
Okay. Radioactive PR problem.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think it's legit. I think it's a legit concern.
Yeah. Is there anything else we want to throw up on this board? Are we missing anything? We're so thorough. What could we possibly be missing here?
Right.
I just also want to say, thinking about this canister, because the way that radiotherapy treatment works is like, I guess there's this little crystal of like cesium-137 or whatever, and it's in this case and it's totally blocked, like, so it's safe, like you can be near it, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then it just like the case has this little opening and it gets like a little bit of exposure of the stuff inside and then it's closed again, and like that little bit of exposure is supposed to kill like your cancerous cells or whatever. So you're supposed to like sort of aim it at your cancerous cells. But the stupid me is like, why couldn't the hospital or like the like cleanup crew or whatever just like take that canister, just the canister? You can leave like all the other stuff, but
right.
like take the canister and get that out of there. I mean, am I stupid?
Is it oversight? I mean, maybe they thought, well, they were saying that they wanted to go back and get this stuff is what you were saying, right?
That's yeah, they did. And maybe there was like an issue with like how they were going to do it.
I think it's a huge machine. The canister is in the machine.
Right.
But the machine itself is very large. I mean.
So you need to move it properly so that you're
yeah.
not.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure there was a logistical issue that we're not thinking about that stop them from moving it. I don't think they just left it because they forgot.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Sort of like, no.
But I'm sure, you know, money comes into play.
I'm sure,
like, maybe
right.
it's more expensive
it.
To
yeah.
move those.
Right.
And they already had problems with government spending
yeah.
at the time right. and inflation
yes.
and all those
it's
things. So it's like, whoa.
Tough it's just like all of these outside factors that always play a huge role. In these disasters.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
Okay, who's to blame for the Guyana accident? Is it radiotherapy ignorance, poor labeling, cesium-137, the abandoned hospital, negligence from IGR officials, Roberto dos Santos Alves together with Wagner Mota Pereira, 1980s Brazilian economy, the doctors, affinity towards the glow, accessibility of radioactive material, landlords, the court of Goyas, bureaucracy, humanity, humans getting handsy, the IGR security guard, or radioactive PR problem.
What a board.
That's a hell of a board. It's a mix of people and ideas and institutions, which we love to get a good institution in the alarmist jail every now and again.
I think right off the bat, we take the doctors off the board.
Agreed.
Because, they weren't trained for this level.
Yes.
Nope. They shouldn't have been in the place to try to identify radiation poisoning to begin with.
Right.
No. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I also think that radiotherapy ignorance can fall into poor labeling, and also the scrap metal hunters. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just didn't know. It was very clear that they didn't know what was...
Right, yeah. The scope of what they were getting themselves into.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a result of the economy, too. Mm-hmm. They were just trying to make money.
Yeah.
You know, like, they were just trying to feed their family. Right. So it's not their fault that they didn't know
it's
that.
It's a Jean Valjean situation, you know?
Yes, exactly.
What's his number? Five. I can't remember.
25601.
35601. 45601. It definitely ends with an 01. So we can fold things into other things.
Yeah.
So negligence, I think we fold the abandoned hospital into the negligence from the officials.
Yeah.
And I think we could fold like the radioactive PR problem with like the poor labeling.
Yes,
because it's like
poor labeling into the
y'all don't have a brand.
Poor labeling into the PR problem, you're saying?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Y'all need better branding.
Yeah. Better branding.
This is radioactive.
Oh my god, that's what we should have called it. That's a word we were missing. Branding. Better branding.
Better branding.
Radioactive branding problem. That's what it is. Okay.
I feel like we got to take off the material itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
The material is just being material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't have a choice. Yeah.
It didn't ask to be created.
Yeah.
No.
That's true. Right.
Or destroyed.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or to be that dangerous.
No. It was just that sparkly and fabulous. It's not its fault.
Exactly.
I feel like these two, humanity and humans getting handsy, I feel like we can combine those in some way.
Yeah.
Because humans suck.
Yeah. I think humans getting handsy is just a symptom of humanity.
Okay.
And I think that can all fold into the affinity toward the glow.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think also can fold then into the branding problem. Because if branding was better, we would sort of be more suspicious of things that glow.
Right.
Inexplicably. The other thing about the glowing was that I read that not all radioactive material glows and not all cesium-137 glows.
Oh.
In fact, it rarely glows.
Oh.
But it only glows when it interacts with, like, I think moisture in the air or something like that. So it's happened before, but it's kind of rare. So, you know, I don't know if you want to kind of blame that, like, if they had pulled out of this canister sort of a more dull kind of blue rock, would they have just sort of cast it aside and then only they would have been exposed to it? So it was sort of this rare occurrence of the glowing. I'm not sure if that we want to include that.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, if they had pulled out this rock and it hadn't been glowing and they just like threw it in the backyard and then like lost it.
Right.
That could have been even worse.
Disaster.
Because you could have it could have gotten in the groundwater.
Yeah.
Could have, there's lots of other things that could have happened.
And if it's not a very special rock, I mean, I have 1,000, not to brag, but I have 1,000 rocks in my backyard.
Sure.
Fancy.
Humble brag over here.
With all the rocks.
All us peasants aren't worthy.
It would just get mixed up with all my other rocks. So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do here? Accessibility of radioactive material. That feels big.
Yeah.
But I feel like that could be folded in with like the negligence from the IGR officials, the accessibility to the radioactive material. Why was it accessible?
Right.
Because of the negligence of the people who were responsible for it.
Okay. Right. Because landlords.
Yeah.
Landlords. And it's landlords. Yeah.
So what about bureaucracy? Like,
To me, the landlords, the bureaucracy, and the court of Goyas all sort of fall under this, in my opinion, you know, I think more to blame than all three of those things is the negligence from the IGR officials, because mm-hmm. they were the original, okay, we are going to set up a radiotherapy center here, right?
Yeah.
It was their idea. It's their business.
Right.
So, you know,
with that comes
whatever happened. Yeah. With that comes the responsibility of even if you do face, I guess they were prevented from, like, you know, safely removing this unit, but you know, they should have been even more steadfast in trying to get it out. I think I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about how it all went down. It's like hard to say who's to blame, but to me, they were the originators of the, they built it, they put it there. They are the ones who are responsible, you know?
Right.
What do you think?
I that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I also feel like the security guard is,
The security falls into the hospital itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. And also the security guard, is a pretty, typically at least like a pretty low level job.
Right. Yeah.
That's too much to put on a security guard. Is don't let your whole city get radiation poisoning. That's too much for the security guard.
I would agree.
So it feels like we've boiled this down to the government, the economy, and branding. This feels like a very common thing that it's boiled down to.
Wow.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We have the negligence from the IGR officials, mm-hmm. the Brazilian economy in the 80s, and the radioactive branding problem left on the board. Now we have to pick, something has to go to the alarmist jail and something will get the big slap. So my instinct is to send the IGR officials to the alarmist jail. And, well, and you slap the branding?
I think that, yes.
Yeah?
Because even in good or bad economic times, if you have bad branding, you're creating potential risk, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even if this was a thriving Brazilian economy and someone was just an opportunist and stumbled upon something that they thought might be worth something, if it were better branded or labeled, they would be like, oh, this is not the stuff to mess with.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah. I think
lock up the IGR officials and slap the branding.
Yeah. I think so.
I like it.
Okay. So we're going to call it radioactive branding problem. You're getting the big slap. Negligence from IGR officials. You're going to the alarmist jail.
Straight to jail.
That's right. Now, brand. I mean, can we just talk about how important branding is?
Yes. Yes.
It's pretty important.
It is really. I mean, you assume it's an economic or like there's like a you know, selfish, self-interest kind of drive behind branding. Like you think of it in that way, but
you think of it as like your cereal box. Like, is it accurately portraying the fact that it's peanut butter, you know, puffs. Mm-hmm.
That's a good example because some people are highly allergic to peanut butter. So if
you've got
that going on, you should let the public know.
I mean, PR could also fall into like general education.
Yeah, absolutely.
To like the community of like, hey, you've got this shit in your backyard.
Yeah.
It's not going there. Yeah.
Well, that's like a big issue, you know, with food. We have a friend whose father was part of the group that came up with like nutrition facts, like, you know, how you have the nutrition facts on all like food, like now it's all on, has to be on all food.
It has to be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you have to say what's in the food. That used to be the case. It used to be the case that you could just put
back in the
80s,
they didn't have that.
They didn't have
and
that.
Now they're gaming it too. It's like that they game the serving sizes so it makes it seem more healthy, even though it's like, you know,
Well, Katie, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of this terrible nuclear disaster. We couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you so much for having us. I started to be like, oh, this was so much fun, but I feel bad because people died.
People died, and that's kind of awkward. It was a comedy of terror.
Yes, but we're learning. Talking
to you.
Yeah, you're part of the PR, you know, positivity.
Yes, yes.
Spreading the good word so that we don't do this again.
Exactly.
Yes. And if you're listening now and we're happy to have you. And if you guys anybody's listening now and you're holding something that's glowing, just put it down.
Yeah.
Just put it down.
Maybe bury it.
Start there.
Yeah. deep under the ground.
Yeah.
In the aftermath, beyond the tragic deaths and injuries the exposure incident caused, it also had a profound psychological effect on the population in the region. The citizens of Guyana suffered from anxiety and depression and were isolated by nearby provinces who boycotted products from the area. Tourism to Guyana collapsed and businesses crumbled. The total economic losses were estimated to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clinton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey, and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Great Chicago Fire. The Alarmist. Powered by Acast.